Welcome to Tori Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Tzivi Zuckerman, and today we will be studying Malachim Bet, Perek Zion, Chapter 7. If you spray perfume on yourself, do you expect to smell nice? If you stick your hand into a fire, do you expect to get a burn? We understand that in the physical world there is a phenomenon of natural cause and effect. However, we live in a world that lacks clarity about the reality of spiritual cause and effect. We often do not make the connection between our positive or negative spiritual behaviors and the ensuing positive or negative material outcomes. We don't always see how our spiritual input leads to practical output. In contrast, during the time period that we have been studying in Malachim Bet, there was prophecy and there were miracles. The impact of the system of Schar Va'Onesh was much more obvious. Of course, there was still the opportunity for Bechira, personal freedom of choice, even in the context of prophecy and miracles. In the Prakim that we have been studying, Yehoram Melech Yisrael has the choice to look at the events he witnesses and experiences and see the hand of God. Alternatively, he can choose to avert his eyes and avoid the challenging process of personal change. In this parak, we arrive at the climax of all of the stories of Elisha's miracles. There have been many attempts to motivate Yehoram to do tshuva and fulfill his true role as king. The crystal clear message of Schar Va'Onesh, divine accountability for human behavior, is highlighted in this parak through the mechanism of mida keneged mida, measure for measure. This is a divine mechanism whereby the punishment God metes out fits the sin in a thematic sense, which is intended to make the sinner aware of what he has done. The question, as always, is the same. Will Yehoram change? In the last parak, we saw the terrible effects of the famine and siege on the people, and Yehoram's reaction in blaming Elisha. We ended with Yehoram coming to kill Elisha, but ultimately listening to the admonition of his messenger that assassinating the Navi would be counterproductive. When Elisha hears that Yehoram has accepted the advice of the assassin not to kill him, he sees that Yehoram has finally recognized that the famine is a consequence of sin. As a positive outcome of Yehoram's change of heart, Elisha shares a dramatic prophecy. Before we discuss the details of this prophecy, let us take note of the opportunities that Yehoram has had for tshuva until this point. We have seen that Yehoram's responses have been mixed. On the one hand, we see hints of tshuva. He does at times appear to see Hashem's hand in events. He shows respect to Elisha in the war with Moab, as well as when Elisha appears in Shomron with the Aramean forces, calling him Avi, my father. He wears sackcloth and tears his clothes during the siege, and he ends up listening to his messenger and does not try to kill Elisha. However, these are relatively small gestures and do not really represent the wide-ranging and lasting change that is necessary in his role as king. On the other side of the balance sheet, let's review some of his less positive responses. One, we have seen that Yehoram has tended to succumb to despair. For example, when the army ran out of water in the battle with Moab, or when Ben-Hadad sent a letter about curing Naaman's tzaras, or even when he was walking on the wall and saw the woman who was starving. Two, he has been reluctant toward making personal change. We know this from the Ketzef that results in a retreat from Moab and the subsequent confrontations with Aram, including the siege of Aram and the resultant terrible famine. Third, and perhaps most egregiously, we see that instead of introspection and change, he channels his despair and anger into shifting blame for the calamities onto Elisha in a cowardly attempt to absolve himself of any responsibility to change. In this parak, we have one last opportunity for Yehoram to change his behavior, to recognize that Hashem is all-powerful, and to fulfill his role as a king by leading the people away from their evil ways. This last opportunity is presented to Yehoram in an astounding nevuah. The people are in the seventh year of this desperate famine, whose devastating effects we have discussed. And Elisha declares in Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, Shim'u dvar Hashem, ko amar Hashem. Hear the word of Hashem, so said Hashem. Ka'it machar, Se'as solet b'shekel, v'satayim se'orim b'shekel b'shar shomron. This time tomorrow, a se'ah, measurement of choice flour, shall sell for a shekel at the gate of Shomron, and two se'ahs of barley for a shekel. The Malbim explains that although in historical terms these prices were still high, this is an enormous price drop, which would only take place if there would suddenly be huge amounts of food readily available. Elisha makes this proclamation to all of those present, which include the Zekanim, Yehoram, and Yehoram's Shalish, an important officer who was attending him. Unfortunately, Yehoram's Shalish reacts skeptically to this dramatic nevuah. In Pasuk Bet, verse 2, he says to Elisha, Hine Hashem osa arubot b'shamayim hayiyah hadavar hazeh? Even if Hashem were to make windows in the sky, could this actually happen? The officer was essentially denying Hashem's omnipotence, implying that Hashem is not capable of fulfilling the prophecy. Elisha, therefore, feels compelled to respond strongly. And he responds, Hincha ro'e be'enecha u'misham lo tochel. You shall see it with your own eyes, but you shall not eat of it. The Navi then relates how the events played out in fulfilling this prophecy. There were four Mitzora'im, men who had saras, at the gate of the city, since Mitzora'im need to remain outside of the city. Since there's this terrible famine going on, they're desperate for food. So they discuss among themselves, and they decide it's not worth trying to get inside the city of Shomron, since there's no food to be had in the city in any case. And therefore, they decide they have nothing to lose by trying to beg for food at the Aramean army camp, stationed outside, sieging the city. Pasuk Hey, verse 5 relates, Vayavo ad k'tze machan aram behine in shamesh. When they come to the edge of the Aramean camp, there was no one there. The camp was deserted. The text interjects, telling us what had happened and why the camp was deserted. Pasuk Vav, verse 6 says, Vahashem hishmia et machane aram kol rechev kol sus kol chayil gadol. For Hashem had caused the Aramean camp to hear a sound of chariots, a sound of horses, the noise of a huge army. Rashi explains that Hashem made them imagine that they heard the sounds of a huge army approaching. Radak explains that they fled so fast that they abandoned everything, not even taking the time to saddle and mount their horses. This was a huge blessing because the Jews' animals had all died or been slaughtered for food. This amazing miracle is discovered by the Mitzora'im, whom the Gemara in Sota 47a identifies as Gehazi and his sons. Knowing what we already know about Gehazi, we could understand the selfish behavior that ensues. Instead of going immediately to tell the starving populace that there was an abundance of food available, the men first gorge themselves and then spend much of the night hoarding and burying large amounts of the loot. Eventually, however, they realize they might get in trouble if the king realizes that they discovered all this and didn't come report it right away. So they go to the gate of the city and they send a message to the king telling him what has happened. When the king hears the report of the Mitzora'im, he is skeptical. And he suspects that the Arameans are just hiding and trying to lure the Jews into an ambush. Malbim explains that even though Elisha had predicted a great miracle, Yehoram could not bring himself to believe that God had miraculously ended the siege and provided them with much needed food. Yehoram sends scouts to verify whether the Mitzora'im were telling the truth. Pasuk Tevav, verse 15 relates, Vayelchu achareihem ad hayarden. The scouts followed the Aramean tracks all the way to the Jordan River. V'hinei kol haderech mele'a begadim v'kelim asher yishlicha oram b'chatzam. And the whole road was full of clothing and gear which the Arameans had thrown away in their hurry to escape. The messengers return to Shomron and they tell the king what they discovered. The moment the population of Shomron hears the news, they rush out to the Aramean camp to collect all the food and items the army had left behind. This miraculous appearance of an abundant food supply makes the prices of food plummet to the exact prices that Elisha had predicted. Pasuk Tetzayin, verse 16, tells us, a sa'ah of choice flour sold for a shekel, and two sa'ahs of barley for a shekel. Exactly as Hashem had said. The Shalish, the officer who had made fun of Elisha when he gave his nevuah, is standing at the gate, And as he's standing there, the people stampede into the city with the huge amounts of food they'd taken from the Aramean camp. As related in Pasuk Zion, verse 17, Vayirmisuhu ha'am b'shar vayamot. And he was trampled to death at the gate by the people, exactly as Elisha had prophesied would happen, with the words, "You will see it, but you will not eat from it." The Shalish was punished by seeing how wrong he was, but not being able to enjoy it. His punishment was midah keneged midah, measure for measure. He had made fun of the idea that prices would be lowered at the gate, and he was trampled at the gate. There's this connection between the location of the miracle and the location of his death. The Musar and Nevi'im highlights that the stampede that killed him was in fact caused by the very abundance that he had claimed was impossible. We wrap up the parak with some degree of ambiguity. It seems that Yehoram has followed the same pattern as usual. We saw a glimpse of tshuva at the end of the last parak, which merited a prophecy and a huge salvation. However, we have seen that Yehoram is still doubtful and has perhaps reverted to his old cynicism and poor behavior. We'll see in the next parak that it may be time for a new course of action. Reflecting on Yehoram's process, let's take the opportunity to make change in our own lives. We all have ch things that we know we need to change, but we push them off or we look the other way. Let's take the opportunity and commit to some small change. As they say, do tshuva now. Avoid the Elul rush. Tshuva is about making a commitment to start on the journey of becoming who we really want to be, more connected to God and more connected to a deeper part of ourselves. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi nishmas Frida bat Moshe Eliyahu.